The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 9.
Last class, we did a very important thing. Which was establishing the true nature of a Michael and Zoe's strawberry protein shake.
Michael and Zoe's strawberry protein shake.
Okay. And we found out that, I mean, it looks like it's money, right? You could say apparent causes are like this. Okay. We did this in Central Park last year, I think. Something like that. So it looks like the money is causing the milkshake, okay? And then after that, which we didn't get to yet, is when all the milkshake is gone, okay? And if you understand these three parts, you've understood emptiness, and we can go on to the 10th chapter, because we are going to do the 10th chapter in the last half of the last class, okay? Rinpoche took 10 years to teach this book. You did it in like 6 months. It's a new record, okay? Last class we went over the emptiness of the causes, which was the emptiness of the money, okay? The emptiness of the money. And we saw that you can say that money causes a milkshake. I mean, you go to Michael and Zoe's and you give them the money and they give you a milkshake. But it's not a self-existent money. And we talked about it last class. Self-existent means, for it to be self-existent, it would have to exist without your projections and without the projections of the person who's taking the money. So it'd be like, try to imagine money that was money without anyone thinking of it as money. Okay? Seriously. And we talked about wampum and stuff like that. We talked about trying to go to Michael and Zoe's and give them wampum, like seashells, and try to get a milkshake with that. They don't have the perception or the projection onto that as money anymore. They used to in Manhattan when the Dutch were here, and they bought the whole island with this wampum, right? People don't have that anymore, this projection. So we decided that money could, you could say that money causes the milkshake, but not until somebody thinks of it as money, okay? Why did people stop thinking of wampum as money and started thinking of green paper as money? Their karma, okay? It's a projection of your karma. What's forcing you to see it as money is some kind of karma, okay? And people like you and me, like, why would your credit card change from completely full to completely unused to completely overloaded, you know what I mean? That's a change in your projections, okay? Did you spend the money self-existently? No. Okay, so we get into that. Today we're going on to another proof of emptiness. We've had two big ones so far, the sliver of diamond, and then we had the proof of dependent origination. I think some of you might have tried to do your homework. There was one question that I didn't cover, and then I went and hid out today so nobody could find me. I asked you to state the proof of dependent, based on dependent origination, and that wasn't in the non-existent reading that you didn't get. And I didn't also cover it in class. So I'm just going to cover that from the last class, okay? This is the Tendelke Tenzik, okay? If you remember, the sliver of diamond proof was meant to talk about the emptiness of the causes. We were examining the causes, which in the case of the milkshake was the money, okay? When we got to Tendelke Tenzik, that covers all things, okay? It's not like specific, it covers all objects in the universe, okay? Especially if you interpret dependent origination the way that the higher school does, it covers everything, okay? Right? If dependent origination means I'm projecting on everything and they depend on that for their existence, then that proof covers all objects, because all objects are creations of our projections, okay? This part, this Tenzik, like all Buddhist syllogisms or logical statements, will have three parts, okay? First part, you say, Chöchen, okay? Chinangi ngopana Chöchen. Tendapa mete, tende yimeche. That's the how you do it in the debate ground. And you're going to start that in the spring, okay? So the first thing you do is you take the example. What is the example? What are we talking about? What are we arguing about? Okay? Here's the example, or what we're fighting about. My head's too big. The letters are too small. I have to move it up. Okay. Okay, say Chinangi.
Chinangi.
Ngoponam. Chöchen. One more time. Chinangi. Ngoponam. Chöchen. Okay, and then chi means outer objects, like this room. Okay. Nang means inner objects, like your thoughts or your stomach. No, that would be outer. Okay. Yeah, it might be inner. Okay. Somewhere outer than, no. Ki ngopon means, things that do something, okay? Things that do something. Almost everything in your world is a ngopo. Cars, glasses, tongues, teeth, okay? Anything that does anything. Almost everything in this room does something, okay? Ngopon nam means those things. Chöchen means, let's take those. Let's talk about those, okay? Chöchen means, this is what we're going to debate about. We're going to debate about this thing. Okay, chinangi ngopunam chöchen. Okay. Okay. Next is what we call the assertion. Okay, it's what we're trying to prove about them. Okay, dupche chö. Right, and it's. Okay, say tendamba. Mete. Tendamba. Mete. Tendamba means ultimately speaking. Okay, ultimately. Me means they don't exist. Okay, they don't exist ultimately, in an ultimate way. Do they exist at all? Yes. Can you use money? Yes. Does it get you things? Yes. Okay. Does the milkshake exist? Yes. Can it fill your stomach? Yes. Does it exist in an ultimate way? One test is, would it taste the same to everybody? You know, are its qualities inherent in itself? And a test would be, Well, the ultimate test is how many kinds of milkshakes does Michael and Zoe sell? It's like 7 or 8. Why? Because different people like different shakes, okay? Why? Because a strawberry protein shake is not self-existently pleasant to everyone. Why? Because being tasty or not tasty is not a quality of the shake. Why? Because not everybody likes it. If it was a quality of the shake inherently, everybody would like that one and they'd only carry one kind of shake. Seriously, okay? Sometimes things are so obvious that you miss them, right? Why do I like that kind of shake? Because my mind is forcing me to see it that way, to see it as more pleasant than the other shakes. Okay? Why is my mind forcing me to see it that way? Some kind of karma. Was it good karma or bad karma? Must have been good if I enjoy them. Okay? That's all. That's the analysis. Okay? They do exist in a relative way. They do exist with my mind participating in its goodness or badness, and ultimately in its very existence. But they don't exist in and of themselves. And if they did, they would be tasty to everybody. And Michael and Zoe's would only carry one shake, and it would be the only shake in town. Seriously, because nobody else would have to sell any because everyone would only like that one. Okay? Yeah?
Could you substitute the shake that was given the other day about the cookie, taking away pain, and prove the same point?
You could do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if a cookie were self-existently tasty.
Or a milkshake.
Yeah. The example in that case was if you met someone who had just lost their only son to AIDS or something, and you gave them a cookie, and it was a tasty cookie, it would obliterate all of their grief. They'd be totally happy in the next instant because it was self-existently tasty. All right, 100% tasty. It would overtake all their other experiences. Okay, Tintaba Mete. Okay, say tender, yimbecha. Tender, yimbecha. Tender means dependent origination. Yimbecha means because it is one kind of dependent origination. It arises through depending on other things. Okay. It arises. It grows. It begins through depending on other things. If you're in the lowest schools of Buddhism, it depends on other things because it depends on its causes. Okay? If you're a little more sophisticated and you want to cover things that don't have causes but which do exist, for example, empty space or emptiness itself, then you could say it depends. It's dependently originating because it depends on its parts. Okay? And if you're in the very highest school of Buddhism, which is where we're stuck, you would say it's dependently originating because it depends on my projections, forced on me by my past karma, and aimed at some raw data. Which, when you start to look at that, depends on its raw data. And when you look at that, depends on its raw data. And when you get to the thing that you really do believe exists, which is atoms, some little bits of material. I mean, you can agree with everything I say until I get down to atoms. And then you say, there has to be something there. And then I say, can you divide it into two? And you say, yes. Why? Because it has a left side and a right side, and never the twain shall meet. You know, if they ever do meet, the thing will disappear. Seriously, okay? Everything can be split into two. Everything that's physical has a left side and a right side. Okay? Must. Okay? Must. And then it has to be either parts or a whole. It can't be parts because it's only one thing. Okay? It can't be a whole because it's projected onto parts. Okay? It cannot be what it seems. Okay? And you get to zero. You don't find anything. If you keep going, you won't find anything. There is no such thing as atoms. And that isn't what makes up your world. And that's not what a Michael and Zoe shake is made of. Okay? And you can't push those atoms around like you thought you could. You can't make things happen by arranging atoms in certain ways. Okay? Nothing makes another thing move or work. Nothing causes anything else unless some other energy is present. Okay? And that's your projections. Okay? That's your karma. Prove it. I mean, there's nothing that works. I mean, take a medicine. Medicines work sometimes, they don't work at other times. Why? If we knew why, if a medicine's efficiency or its efficacy were based on its atoms, it should always work. Okay? If money was the cause of a Michael and Zoe's milkshake, it should always work when you take money to Michael and Zoe's to get a milkshake, and it doesn't. Okay? If the theory that external causes could make external events happen were true, if it were comprehensive, and if it were not dysfunctional, if it worked, then human beings would be happy. And we're not. It doesn't work, and it's incomplete. It doesn't serve either of the goals of a worldview. It doesn't explain everything in your world, and it doesn't make you happy. It doesn't bring you your goals in life. And people continue to suffer and try to push around self-existent objects to make other self-existent events happen. And it will never work. It can't work because there are no such objects. Okay? There's no such thing as money which causes a Michael and Zoe's milkshake. Okay? There's no such thing. There is some green paper in your pocket. It's not money that buys a Michael and Zoe milkshake by itself, in and of itself. Because if it was, then you could always get a Michael and Zoe's milkshake with it. And you can't. So it's incomplete. And it's to think it works, and to think it's what causes a milkshake is an incomplete worldview, and it doesn't bring you happiness. It doesn't always give you a milkshake. What I'm trying to say is that, as I said before, the idea that that's what causes a Michael and Zoe's milkshake, and that you can get one by working harder and getting more of this green paper, is incorrect. Period. That's not where money comes from. Okay. Did you have a question? Yeah.
So you're debunking
just about everything. Seriously, it doesn't work.
Tell me your view on evolution. Are you studying the
evolution of species, you mean?
Okay. Yeah, species.
Or where the human race is going eventually?
No.
No, seriously.
The solar system, the galaxy, the universe. We go to museums to see dinosaur bones. We see carbon dating.
Yeah.
That's all projection.
Of course. There's nothing which is not a projection. Even emptiness itself, as we proved last week, is a projection. Okay. Even the fact that nothing is not a projection is projected itself. How's that? Okay. No, we're not saying there's no dinosaur bones or anything like that. Okay. If human beings did come from that, if they did evolve from that, if the physical matter of a human being did evolve from that, that's a projection too. That's all we're saying. We're not saying that a taxi car can't break your legs. We're just saying it's a projection. Why? Because if the answer to the question of why was I in the crosswalk when the car came across the crosswalk is that we don't know, or that doesn't have a real cause, or that's random. You know, like science is telling you, frankly, some things have causes and other things don't. Some events do have causes, other events don't have causes. That in itself should make you suspicious. Well, where is what, you know? When do you decide something has a reason when do you decide something doesn't have a reason? And basically they're telling you, and they've been telling you all along, you just never caught them, right? They're telling you, when we can't figure out the reason, it doesn't have a reason. Okay? What example? Two guys are walking across the crosswalk. A cab comes across the crosswalk. It hits one of them and kills him. Breaks his legs. Doesn't touch the other guy. Okay? Why? It's an event. It's an event as much as a plane flying. It's an event as much as corn growing. That's an event. The fact that one guy got killed and the other guy didn't, that's an event. It has to have a cause. You can't say some events have causes and some events don't have causes. That's not scientific. Science is breaking its own rules. Okay? They say that doesn't have a cause. Okay? That's all. Yeah? Okay. Okay. All right.
You said that atoms react differently to compassion than they do to hate.
Oh, okay.
She
said I said that atoms act differently to compassion and to anger. Not in the present moment. Not in the present moment at all.
Okay.
Buddhism never ever said that. In fact, we're going to cover that tonight. there is always a time gap between a cause and a result. You know, if I have compassion now towards a pile of atoms called the person who irritates me, in the future I won't have to meet those people again. If I have anger towards that pile of atoms called the person who irritates me, I will have to meet that person again. There will never be anything more than my projection on a pile of atoms. But that's real. That counts as real. Okay. There's a joke in Majjhimika. It says, just because something doesn't exist through its own nature doesn't mean it doesn't exist. To say that something doesn't have a nature or doesn't exist by its own nature is not equivalent to saying it doesn't exist. Okay? Like that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Everything has a cause.
No.
Oh,
no. There are a few things. There are a few objects. Opening lines of Abhidhamma Kosha. Chinam sakche sapame, namatobi dushinam sakche kanju dera la sana kunu gyeba gyur. Sabme namki demba dam duma chinam sum yang te. There's only about three or four things that don't have a cause. One is empty space. Empty space doesn't change. The place where this pen is doesn't change. It can either be occupied, occupado, or not occupado. But either way, it doesn't change. It's still there. Okay? And emptiness itself, which is the general lack of a thing which never existed, never changes. It's never less or more empty. And it never goes away, and it never starts. It's just always there. Okay? The object on which it's hanging can disappear, and then it will disappear. But during its existence, it never changes. Okay? And it has no cause. Okay. Yeah?
Given that all objects and phenomena how then does one see what we see in the reality in the form of the level of objects? For example, the vast majority of there are species called mammals, there are species called insects. How does one explain that kind of relative to the form?
Yeah, it's a really good question. He asked how come groups of people can perceive same things, or groups of beings can look the same, like all mammals have roughly the same qualities. You could ask the question of why is there a border between Mexico and the U.S.? Seriously, okay? Why are there things called Mexicans and why are there things called Americans? You know, what created that? According to Buddhism, as a nation, all the people living in the United States, if they enjoy some kind of prosperity, which is not always the case, but those who do enjoy some prosperity, as a group, did some charitable action, like help starving people in other countries or something like that, decided as a group to pass laws that they would devote a certain part of their taxes to help people who needed food. And because of that, we all have a certain level of prosperity. And then people living in Mexico, assuming they don't have any prosperity, as a group in the past, withheld their help from other people and chose not to help other people. And that's why they're having most of them having a lack of prosperity. And if you think about it, the border between the two is totally artificial. It's created by those two karmas. You see, nations are created by the communal actions of those people in the past together. It's very interesting. Why do 3 billion people have a similar perception of the sun rising every day? You know, that is a projection. It doesn't have to be that way. One day the sun will burn out. Third chapter, Abhidhamma Kosha, last lines, okay? It'll nova to seven times its present heat. The earth will melt, and then the sun will die out. What happened to the sun? It didn't die out. 3 billion people's karma to see a sun has finished, okay? And it's true. Everyone in this world, frankly, who has the sun come up for them in the morning, must have done, if they enjoy the light, okay, if they're thankful for the light, you know, if it somehow helps them, they must have, 3 billion people must have done some kind of action together to to help someone else who needed to see something or who needed warmth or something like that. No kidding. According to Buddhism, that's where the sun comes from. The sun itself is not self-existent. The sun itself is a projection. The fact that it comes up every morning is a projection. The day you die and move to another realm, for you, that karma has ended. Okay? And you won't see the sun come up. Okay? One more, but we won't get done tonight. How about, do you mind? Be a bodhisattva. Okay.
If you keep looking at something, you keep analyzing a thing, and there's always a left and a right, and you keep going.
Physical stuff, yeah.
Okay, physical stuff.
Yeah.
And you keep going down through the levels.
Yeah.
Are you saying that if you there is something at the end, that is not what you expect, or there's nothing?
There's nothing. I mean, she asked, is there any... The obvious question is, do you finally get to a point where there's some raw data? Or I think maybe you're saying, is it that there's absolutely nothing there at all? Or is it that there's nothing there in the way that you thought it was there? How's that? There are 14 unanswered questions in Buddhism. The reason the Buddha didn't answer them is because the person asking them truly, in their own mind, was framing the question. Both options that the person questioning the Buddha gave, that person was perceiving as self-existent. You see what I mean? So if the Buddha said yes, he would have been admitting to a self-existent yes. If he said no, he'd be admitting to a self-existent no. And he knew that that person was thinking that way. Either option, if he had given an answer, would have been interpreted by that person as meaning things do have some nature of their own and they are not projections. Okay? Maybe I should cop out. No, I'll answer. No. There is always a level of raw data below the current one until you look at it. Matak machepa, unexamined, there's a level of raw data. As soon as you examine it, you can't find it. Okay? So you tell me. You see, that's why I'm answering your question that way. If you think about it, in your mind, both options you were thinking of as self-existent. So I'm going to give you a Pung Sumba, a third option. Okay, that's all. Okay, we got to go on or you won't get home tonight. Tendaya Mitya, the whole proof states, let's consider all inner and outer things which do anything. Okay. They don't exist in an ultimate sense. Because they depend for their existence in the highest school on your projections. They are dependent origination. Okay? And that is the proof of dependent origination. Normally, in a Buddhist syllogism, there'll be those three steps. And then oftentimes there's a fourth step. And we'll give that one. Say, Pena. Sungyen. Shin. Pena. Sungyen. Shin. Michael Wick asked me a good question. He said, give us the names of each part of the syllogism, each of the elements. Number one here is called, you can call it the object under consideration, okay? The thing that we're trying to examine. You're going to learn all this next class. By the way, logic is not just a stupid exercise. It's called the key to understanding emptiness. Okay? Somebody else asked Gyaltsep Jay what was the kindest thing that Jetsun Kapa did for him, and he said he taught me logic. You know? Dendamba Mete, that is called the assertion. Okay? It does not exist in an ultimate sense. They do not exist in an ultimate sense. Number three is called the reason. Why? Because it's dependent origination. They are dependent origination. They have dependent origination. Okay? Which is to say, in the highest school, they are projections forced on us by our past deeds, good deeds or bad deeds. Number four is called the example. And the trick in number four is to give your opponent an example which they can relate to. Okay? They already accept with regard to that example that if something were dependently arising, it would be like, it would ultimately not exist. It would not exist in an ultimate sense. They accept that about your example. Okay, so here we go. The example is perna, for example. Perna means for example. Suknyen means the reflection of a person in a mirror. Okay? Suknyen means the reflection of a person in a mirror. Shin means it's like that. It's like a reflection of a person in a mirror. Okay? If you think about, I mean, I don't know if you've ever done it, but I've seen children do it. They mistake them, the reflection in the mirror for themselves, right? And that's the point here. You know, like you might, when you're in one of those cafes that's really like 6x6 and there's a mirror on one wall and it looks like it's 6x12, you know what I mean? You're mistaking the reflection for an actual room. Okay, so the idea here is that the reflection looks like a real person, but of course it's not. Okay, the reflection looks like a person, but it's just a reflection in a mirror. Okay, so it's an example of something that looks like it's real, but it's not real. Okay, that's the proof of dependent origination. Okay, that's just so you can finish your last homework. Now we start the real class. Okay, this is how we get behind every week. Say again. Sorry? Oh, the whole proof. Consider all inner and outer things which do anything. Consider all inner and outer things which do anything. I'm repeating that proof, okay? Consider all inner and outer things which do anything. They do not exist in an ultimate sense. Because they exist in dependence, they occur in dependence through depending on other things. Okay. They are, for example, like a reflection in a mirror. Okay. By the way, if you remember where we started tonight, where was that? We were trying to analyze these three elements here. The money, the shake, and the end of the shake. Okay, this was the cause. This was the result. And in between here you had a growing or starting? How's starting? The starting of the shake. The guy goes in the back and starts, you know, throwing stuff in the cup and stuff like that. Around here, you have what? Ending of the shake. Okay. That sad moment. Okay. We're trying to explain each element. That diamond sliver proof was meant to prove that this thing here, the money, is not self-existent, okay? What does self-existent money look like? Good, nice. He said, doesn't look like anything because it doesn't exist. Yinayang, dunjin namba masharwa, de tombe toni tobe mebe echa. You can't perceive emptiness without trying to imagine it, though, okay? Because perceiving emptiness on an intellectual level is realizing that that thing can't exist. So what would it look like if it did exist? Okay, what would self-existent money look like if it did exist? In terms of Michael and Zoe. I hope they appreciate all the free advertisement they're giving.
It looked like a green piece of paper.
No, he said it looked like a green piece of paper. No. Huh?
It looks like the cause of a shake.
It would always buy you a shake. It would always get you a shake. Okay. Even if you died on the way to Michael Zoni's, it would get you a shake. Even if they were closed, it would get you a shake. Even if they had run out of strawberries, it would get you a strawberry shake. Okay. Really, self-existent money. If money existed the way that you truly believe that it does, and you live by this, your life is this. I'm describing your life. You truly, you honestly You totally, no matter what I stand up here and say, you believe that the shake is caused by the money. And that's wrong. The money that you think is causing the shake doesn't even exist. It's not a question of whether it causes a shake or not. The money which could have caused the shake is a two-headed, purple, full-sized elephant rampaging in the cafeteria of the Quaker house. It never did exist. It never will exist, hopefully. It doesn't exist now. Okay? And you are living in that world. You live by that, you know. You think that you might have to tell a white lie, so-called, to get something. There's no such thing. Okay? You can't get anything by saying a white lie. Why? What's the ultimate proof of that? Very simple. It's so simple that you missed it for 40 years, and Western civilization has missed it for however long. Seriously, no kidding. What's the proof that a white lie doesn't get you what you want? Yeah.
If you lie, you get something every time you lie.
Right. It doesn't work all the time. Seriously. Causes should be replicable, okay? Given the same conditions, the same white lie should always get you what you want. Some guy came up to me and said, I lied on my green card app. I got a green card because I lied, you know. I married some girl or something like that. So why do you say it doesn't work? It works. I lied. I got a green card. Green card is pleasure for me. Lie is bad karma. Good pleasure came from bad karma. So everything you said, this is at Central Park. The guy came up to me, you know. According to Buddhism, the green card, if you enjoy it, was caused by your taking care of someone else who needed prosperity or whatever. You see what I mean? The reason you got the green card had nothing to do with lying. Okay? Why? Because some people lie to try to get a green card and they don't get it. Some people lie to get a green card and they do get it. And therein lies the suffering of the entire planet. You know, everyone on this planet is undertaking activities which not only don't get them what they want, they get them the opposite. Because now that guy will never get a green card again. You see what I mean? And people, the karma of lying will continue to haunt him and cause him suffering. Seriously. It has no connection to getting the green card. Okay. Why? Because it doesn't work all the time. Prove it. Your life proves it. You're suffering, okay? The way you're acting now doesn't work. Do you get it? Okay. Get it? All right. So what am I supposed to do? Be pure ethically, follow the bodhisattva activities, keep your secret vows if you have them, and watch the fireworks. You know, seriously, I mean, you tried the other way for 30, 40 years. You're not happy, you're getting older, you don't get the things you want, you still meet with crap all the time. Now try the other thing. Okay, give it a try. Give it an honest try. College try, right? It works. It really does work. You know, that's why we're having this class. Okay. It even works to the extent that you would not have to perceive this body die. Okay. Prove it. We never saw anybody who didn't die before. Right, you didn't see anybody who didn't die before, including you. Okay. Why do you think you would see it? You see? Does that prove that other people haven't seen people not die? Maybe even the same people that you saw die. Okay. Does the fact that you cannot recognize that some people in this room might be tantric deities mean that they're not? You see what I mean? Are there any tantric deities in this room? No. Is there anybody in this room who can recognize the tantric deities in this room? And if they can, does that mean that you should be able to? You see? The tantric deity should be self-existent. If they were sitting next to me, I should see them as a tantric deity. Come on. Get back to the pen, you know. Is this a pen or a chewable object? It sounds like I'm just being silly, but I like to be silly, but I'm not being silly now. It's both, okay? Depends on what you are. If you're a dog, honest, no kidding. This is a chewable object. Tema, pramana, valid perception. Totally valid. Correct. For a dog, this is a chewable object. For a human, it's a pen. Okay? No contradiction for it to be both things. If the dog cannot see a pen, does that mean the pen's not here? If you can't see that some of the people in this room might be are tantric deities, does that mean they're not here? If you can't see that there's some people in this room who will not have to die and get old, does that mean they're not here? Does that mean they are dying and getting old? No. Does the dog have to see this as a pen? It's the same question, okay? Really, honestly. That's the function of emptiness. That's the use of emptiness, okay? It's called natural nirvana, the emptiness of things. We'll talk about it later. Okay. We got to get on to another proof. Now we're going to talk about the proof of the emptiness of the result, which is the shake, okay? The money doesn't work on its own. It works because of your karma, okay? What about the shake? Let's look at it from the result side, all right? And this proof is called... So yume
kego
ki tensik.
Yume
kego
ki
tensik.
Okay.
Yume means exists. Me means doesn't exist. Ke means starts. Ke means starts. Or begins, okay? Or you can say grow, okay? How's grow? Right. Gok means we deny. It also means to stop, okay? So here you got stopping and starting. Stopping and starting. Tensik means proof. I'll translate the whole thing. This is the proof you can say it this way that things let me think about it. I'll say it this way. The proof where you deny that things could grow which already existed or not. What's that mean? Okay? What's that mean? When you have a seed for a corn plant, say, and you haven't planted the seed yet, so the plant hasn't grown yet. Okay, the seed is the cause and the plant is the result. At the time of the cause, okay, when you have the seed in your hand, does the result exist yet or not? No, okay? So in fact, what seems to happen is that something which didn't exist starts to exist, right? The plant which didn't exist before starts to exist now. Why? Because of the cause, okay? But at the time of the cause, the thing didn't exist yet, right? But Nagarjuna and everybody else says, forget it. Okay? It's not true that the result did exist at the time of the cause. Yeah. And it's not true that the result didn't exist at the time of the cause. Meh. By the way, he also says two more things. It's not true that the result both existed and didn't exist at the time of the cause. He's covering all the bases. It's also not true that it neither existed nor didn't exist at the time of the cause. All the above is wrong. All four possibilities are wrong. What? That the result was already there, that the result wasn't there yet, that it both was there and wasn't there yet, or that it wasn't, or was there yet. All four don't work. I'll say it again. And this is the proof, okay? What's the church hand? What's the example? He gives... results. You can take a corn sprout, okay? It's not true to say, here's number one, there's going to be four, okay? It's not true to say that the plant exists at the time that the seed is still there. Meaning before you plant the seed, say, okay? It's not true that the plant is there yet. Number two, it's also not true that the plant is not there yet. You should give me a weird look, okay? I had about three. Maybe the rest of the people are asleep, I don't know. Number two is, it's not true that there was no plant yet when you were still holding the seed in your hand.
Oh.
Okay? That's number two. Number three is, it's not true that the plant was there and wasn't there at the same time. Number three is, it's not true that the plant was there and wasn't there at the same time as the seed, right? Number four, it's not true to say that the plant was neither there nor not there at the time of the seed. I'll repeat it. It's not true to say that the plant was neither there nor not there at the time of the seed. All of the above are wrong. I'm getting a headache, actually. No. I had to do this in Tibetan for like 15 years, right? At like, you know, you put the meven, you can make pop, you know. It's not true that the plant is neither there nor not there at the time of the cause. All four is not true. Okay. Which, by the way, number one is okay. It is true. I'm sorry. It is true that it's not true that the it is true that the plant wasn't there yet when the seed was there. Okay, number one is okay, no problem. Let's skip number two for a minute. If number one is false, then number three has to be false, because it's both number one and number two, right? So we can throw out number three right away. We threw out number one because the plant's not there before you plant the seed. We can throw out number three because it can't be both there and not there at the same time anyway. Nothing can. Okay. Number four is a little tricky. You can't say it's neither there nor not there. It's got to be something, right? Okay? Number four we can throw out. Now, number two is the tricky one. I'll say number... Okay. If you think I'm trying to trick you on number four, we'll do it more slowly. It would be crazy to say, look, both are impossible. You can't say it's there, and you can't say it's not there when the seed is there. Okay? Okay, that's not true. Of course it's one or the other. Okay. Number four we can throw out. Can I?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it out. Okay, number two. Number two. This is way to win a debate in the monasteries, just to confuse everybody and keep going. Number two. I mean, number two is the real one. Isn't it true that there wasn't a plant there when you had the seed in your hand? Yeah. And then when you planted it and watered it, then a plant came up. And something happened. Obviously, number two is true, but Nagarjuna said, it ain't true. Why did he say that? Why did Arya Nagarjuna say that? Come on, you know the punchline. If you've studied Madhyamika for more than 20 minutes and you don't know the punchline, come on. You have to add the words self-existently. Okay. This is huge debate in Madhyamika whether he should have added the words and made it easier for 20 centuries of people, you know. Anyway, you can write him a letter. Okay. Is it true that the plant wasn't there self-existently? Yeah. Which Master Shantideva, well, let me get on to the next question. He says that's about the same as asking, if it did grow, would it be self-existent? You see what I mean? I mean, it boils down to that, doesn't it? If the seed did give a plant, would that plant be self-existent? Okay. Could that plant be self-existent? Could the milkshake from Michael and Zoe's be self-existent? We finished with the money, okay? We junked the money already. Money, which in and of itself gets you a milkshake, doesn't exist. But you live your life believing that, and that's why you die, actually. Okay? That is the cause of your death. This gets serious, okay? I mean, if you get it, the stakes are very high. Your life, okay? Your life or your death, okay? The money, which could always get you a Michael and Zoe's milkshake, does not have any nature of its own. Okay? Well, I understand that it might not always get me a milkshake, but isn't it money per se? Come on, you know, take it to Timbuktu, see if that green paper gets you a jacket on a cold day. You know what I mean? Go to a place where people don't have the karma to see it as money and try to use it. You know, it's I've done it. I got caught in the snow one time deer hunting. Sorry. And we started a fire with these dollar bills, you know. I mean, I wasn't perceiving it as money. We were perceiving it as, you know, something to start a fire with. Okay? It changes. The karma changes. The projection changes. Okay? How about the cause? How about the milkshake? You see what I mean? Is the milkshake... Did the milkshake exist before you promised to pay the money? No. I mean, you go and you order... And it's assumed that you're going to pay. If you look really bad, they might ask you to show the money first. You know what I mean? They haven't done it yet. But basically, you have to have the money before you can get the milkshake. But what about the milkshake side? Is the milkshake a milkshake that would always grow if you had the money? You see? If the cause were there, would it always grow? First question I ask you is, was it there before you put up the money? Was it there before you came in and ordered it? I mean, the strawberries are there and the milk is there and all that, but the milkshake wasn't there yet, okay? It wasn't there yet. That cancels number one, possibility number one, okay? The shake ain't there yet until the guy makes it, okay? And he ain't going to move until you put up some money. Okay, so number one is wrong. Number three is wrong because it cannot be both there and not there at the same time, regardless of self-existent or anything. Number four is wrong because it can't be not there and not there at the same time. It's got to be one or the other. Okay. But what about number two? Number two says it's not true that the milkshake wasn't made until you put up the money. Is that true? No. What does it mean? It means a milkshake that could exist by itself, regardless of your seeing it as a milkshake and regardless of your karma, doesn't exist. Could never grow. Okay, got it? We just proved that money is not self-existent, which is the cause, and then the second thing we did was prove that the milkshake is not self-existent without your karma. Okay? Without your karma. Right? Lots of people have put down money on counters and suddenly died. I knew a lama who died with a roll in his hand, sitting like that in my house. You know, lots of people have put their hand on the milkshake and never drunk it. You know, it happens. It's not necessarily a milkshake until you experience it as a milkshake, okay? All right? Okay. Who is Master Shantideva picking on specifically? This is a homework question. Wake up. When he tries to prove that results are not self-existent by using this proof, okay? He's picking on two different groups, all right? Here they are. Say, Tang Temba. Tang Temba. Tang Temba in Sanskrit is Samkhya, okay? And in English you can call them the numerists. This was a popular school back in India in, you know, Shantideva's time, Master Shantideva's time, 13 centuries ago. You can call them Judeo-Christians. Seriously. Okay, I'm not picking on, and I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's a belief of some of our religious traditions which is very similar to what they believed in. That's all I'm saying, okay? I'm not criticizing that thing, okay? Yeah? Nope. I'm going to explain it right now, okay? One belief of that school, of that system called Judeo-Christian belief system. Okay, say Gyudusu. Yepe. Debu. Gyudusu. Yepe. Debu. Gyu means cause. Cause. Do means time. Do means time. Su means at the time. At the time of the cause. Yepa means it exists. There exists. What? Debu. Debu means the result. The Thumbtails had a very weird system. There were 20-something existing classifications of objects. They were all created by some primal one. You know, they exist all over the place. When things cause things, they're actually just taking a sheet away and revealing something that was always there. Okay? They believe that all causes in the world have always been there. And when they're caused or when they grow, it's just that it's being revealed. Okay, they believe it's always been there. Okay. It would be the equivalent of saying that the cause was already there before, I'm sorry, the result was already there before it was caused. Okay, the result was there before the cause did its shtick. Okay, as if there were in some philosophical school a belief that there was a being who created all things. Okay? Before he got around to creating himself. Which is crazy. You know, it's just silly. It's just silly. Okay? If person A created all things in the universe, and if person A is a thing in the universe, then person A must have been there before he created everything. You see what I mean? The result must have been there before the cause was there. Or the result must have been there when the cause was there. Okay? Say again? Oh, I'm just saying this. That if there is a belief like that, that would be the same thing. It would be saying that before the seed cracked open, the plant was already there. Okay? Which is impossible. Okay? And that's all. The Samkhyas believed that there was some eternal result there forever, and a cause is just revealing what is already there. That's all. Okay. They believe that the thing was there before the cause did its thing to create the thing. Okay. On day zero, the guy who created the stuff on the other 6 days was already there. You see what I mean? Anyway, you get it. Yeah.
What's the explanation for knowing the future like in the Buddhist canon and people's perception of
it? I'm sorry, to know the future?
You know, the idea that, you know, someday the supernova will happen, or someday
right.
Buddhism will move from the west to the east. Or
yeah.
That foreknowledge that seems to be...
She asked, what's the nature of it? Or how do we know it?
The explanation of that compared to causing an effect already.
Okay, she said, if the thing hasn't occurred yet, then how could a Buddha know it, for example? So it's said that the Buddhas know all things, that the Buddhas know the future. They are not omnipotent, right? We know that. They didn't create the world. You created the world. How? You collected karma. Yeah, but how was the first karma collected? There's no such thing. Ergo, you know, there isn't any such thing. Okay? But that's not comfortable. You mean there's something without a cause? I didn't say that. Everything has a cause. You're the one who's saying that there's something without a cause if you say there had to be a first cause. Seriously. Okay? Got it? It's obvious. I mean, I'm sorry. Mrs. Melvin was wrong, you know. Mrs. Melvin was my first grade teacher, right? She just filled you with a lot of stuff that doesn't make any sense, okay? How did the Buddhas know the future? There's two theories, okay? There's a Buddhist school that says Buddhas are very good. They're like supercomputers who can see everything in the world now and extrapolate what will happen in 100 years from current events. You know, they know, like a chess master, all the possible moves in the future. And that's all they ever see. It's not that they really see the future, because it hasn't happened yet. Okay? That's not how they see things. Okay? They actually do see future events. Okay? Had they happened yet? No. How can you perceive a thing that hasn't happened yet? You perceive it as a thing that hasn't happened yet. It's a long story. Okay? All right. We'll get into it. There's a big debate in the Abhidhamma Kosha, okay, about it. Anyway, that's the first group that Master Shantideva is attacking, okay? That's number one. Number two, say Debu, Rangshin, Ki, Yepa, Depe, Nangba. One more time. Debu, Rangshin, Ki, Yepa, Dupe. Nangba. Debo means a result. By the way, for your information, De means rice. Debo means fruit in colloquial Tibetan. The ultimate result in Asia is rice, right? I mean, that's what you're interested in producing. Okay. Debo. Rangshin ki yopa means has some nature of its own. Exists through some nature of its own. It has some nature of its own. Dupa means they believe it. They believe that. Who? Certain, but not all, Nangbas. Nangba means an inner one, which means a Buddhist school. The second group that Master Shantideva is attacking are Buddhists who believe that a Michael and Zoe's milkshake could occur on its own. Okay? Could occur on its own. That anything could make a Michael and Zoe's milkshake happen on its own. So you've got two points of view. Is the money self-existent? No. Why? Because it doesn't always work. Okay? If it were self-existent, it would always work. Okay? What about the shake? You know, is the shake created by the money? No. Why? Sometimes you have money and the shake's not there. You can't make a shake. Shake doesn't function. Okay? Or you can say, you get a shake in your hand and you spill it. You drop it. I mean, you've done it, right? Like you stood in line for 20 minutes and finally got it, you know? And then, you know, an ice cream cone in the summer, right? And then that top one rolls off, you know? Then you're like, oh man, you know, you just, that was your last dollar, right? And you're like looking at it and you didn't get... The ice cream is not self-existent. It's very important. It sounds silly, you know. You'd say, but that's not the ice cream that I paid for. It's not fair to pick on that ice cream. It's not fair to bring up that ice cream. That ice cream is an accident or random, or if you think about it, it's not really an ice cream anymore. It's on the ground now. But you're stuck in that Western civilization thing that... we have to stop asking why the ice cream fell off. You see what I mean? You should ask. You know, you ask your mom, why did my ice cream fall off and Johnny's didn't? You know, and they say, well, you know, you tilted it. You say, yeah, but he tilted sometimes and it doesn't fall off. Yeah, but yours was ready to fall off and his wasn't. Well, how come mine was ready to fall off and his wasn't ready to fall off? That doesn't have an answer. Oh, but mom, isn't that a phenomenon? Isn't that an event? Doesn't everything have causes? That's what Mrs. Melvin said. Yeah, everything has causes, but we don't talk about those causes because we don't know what causes that. We don't know why your ice cream fell off and his ice cream didn't fall off. You see, it's incomplete, and it doesn't make you satisfied. If you're the kid whose ice cream fell off, you want to know why. Is it a silly question? No. Could you live in a world where ice cream never fell off? Of course. Okay? Seriously, of course. That's why you're here, in your heart. That's why you're here. No. That's really why you're here. You want to be happy. You think somehow in the back of your mind that something in this class might make you happy. If beings took care of the food needs of all other beings, no one's ice cream would ever fall off. You could hold it upside down, shake it. It would not fall off. Gravity itself is not self-existent. Seriously. Okay? I'm not kidding. Okay? The fact that there's gravity to make ice cream fall down is a result of bad karma for the person whose ice cream falls down. And it doesn't have to be that way. Seriously. Really, everything is possible. You don't have to age. You don't have to age. Okay? You don't have to die. Those things are not self-existent. Really. They have causes. And I'm not talking, you know, you get the AIDS virus and it kills you, and that's what kills you. Come on, that's not what kills you. Okay? Some people live for a long time with it. Okay? Seriously. Something else is killing you. Right? And you can stop those things. Okay? You can stop those things. I'm not kidding when I talk about an ice cream that never falls off. In a Buddha paradise, ice creams never fall off. I have it on good authority or something. Okay? Seriously. And I'm not being funny. I'm not trying to be funny. We're talking life and death. Okay? You could live in a world where people don't die. There are places like that. And that's what Buddhism promises. Buddhism is not for the purpose of being calm while you're dying or something like that. That's not the function of Buddhism. Buddhism, the Buddha said, Kiganachi, you can avoid rebirth, aging, death, and sickness, period. And he wasn't being metaphoric, he wasn't being, you know, something like that. He's talking truly, honestly, okay? Let's take a break, okay? Then we'll stop for some more. Yeah.
What about the mother that says, oh, God knows?
Homework question number 3. Explain the basic reasoning that Master Shantideva uses to show that a cause cannot give to rise to a result which does not exist at the time. Okay, so somebody came up to Master Shantideva and said, I like your... Excuse me? Hello. I put it down there because sometimes they leave it on during the break and lots of embarrassing things get out. Okay. Explain the basic reasoning that Master Shantideva uses. You don't have to write the question. Come on. To show that a cause cannot give rise to a result which does not exist at that time. So the opponent says, come on, Master Shantideva, I'm not one of these stupid samkhyas, you know. I didn't think the result was laying there under a sheet. And then suddenly the cause like took a sheet away and it was there, you know. I don't happen to believe that God made himself before he made himself. Okay? I'm not that stupid, all right? But it seems quite reasonable to me that the thing was not there when the cause was starting, and then when the cause did its thing, the thing that didn't used to be there started. And that's the way things really happen. Okay? How does Master Shantideva talk about that? You have to understand, he starts out, the reason I put the question here is that he starts out by saying, look, it's not like you could ever create a thing that never changed, okay? That's his approach. It's interesting. He doesn't start talking about projections, he doesn't start talking about causes, he doesn't talk about dependent origination. He says, look, how could you ever create a thing that never changed? Okay, so that's the answer to the question, whether you understand it or not. Okay, his approach, which I think is interesting, and Gyaltsen J kind of has to cover for him, is, look, how could you create something that never changed? Okay, how could you create something that never changed? Or how could you take something that never changed and turn it into something that did change? Okay, that's his question to the opponent. You know, and if you're the opponent, you're saying, like, what's that got to do with my question, you know? I'm asking about something that didn't exist yet. You're talking about something that's not changing, you know? The implication, of course, is that if the Michael and Zoe's shake existed on its own, it could never change. For example, it would always be the most delicious shake in New York, okay? If it had a quality of its own, of being delicious, then it would be delicious to everyone all the time. It would never, ever change to sour. It would never, ever melt. It would never, ever evaporate under my closet and start stinking, and then I find it like a week later, you know. You know what I mean? It would be if being tasty were a quality of that milkshake, it would always be tasty. Okay? And that's his answer to someone who says, I think causes cause things that don't exist yet and then come into existence. And he says, no, because the things you have in mind, it's again like someone asking him a question, but in their mind all they're thinking is self-existent milkshake. So how do you answer a question like that? Somebody comes up to you and says, I think a milkshake that was tasty from its own side didn't exist before you ordered it. And he says, no, you're wrong. Okay, it never could exist anyway. It's not like a self-existent tasty milkshake didn't exist, and then when you put the money down, a self-existent tasty milkshake was created. That's impossible. That's all. He's saying what you have in mind as a milkshake is exactly what you had in mind last class when we were talking about money. money, which has power of its own to buy a milkshake, and milkshakes, for example, which have tastiness as part of their being, are both equally what? Totally non-existent. There is no such thing. You live in a world where you struggle for those things. You create bad karma to buy and sell those things, and you're doing it all for nothing. Okay? You see what I mean? That's the irony of our existence. You know, you are lying, stealing, sexual misconduct, killing, slander, harsh words, idle gossip, craving, ill will, wrong view. Because you're trying to get things self-exist that you see as self-existent. You cannot get a milkshake by paying for it. And a milkshake cannot be tasty from its own side. If you want a milkshake to be tasty, you have to serve other people. You have to supply food to other people. You have to take care of other people to the best of your ability. Doesn't mean you have to give away all your money. No, you could just like give away half and then you'd be in half of a Buddha paradise. Is it advisable to give it all away the first day that you hear this teaching? No, because you'll regret it later, and that's a very bad karma. Okay, what does Master Shantideva say? Start out with carrots and potatoes. You know, start on a real level that you can maintain, and then work up to giving away your eyeball. Okay, like reaching in and handing it to somebody. Okay, and you can, you'll be able to do it. Okay, but realize where the shake is coming from. It's not coming from the money. Realize what's making it tasty. It's your karma, okay? Will there be a last pop song that you can hear on your radio, on your car radio? You know, they're not self-existent. You know, you think right now you could go home and play a song anytime you want. You really think that. You do believe that. You know, you look at your radio and you say, you think you have a choice of turning it on or not turning it on. You know, you really do believe that. You believe that the breaths that come in and out of your nose are innumerable. You're not like counting them. You're not like worried, you know, like there goes number 7,390,000,000, you know. But you should be counting them. The karma will change. All karma changes. There will be a day when you play your last song on the radio. And literally you will not be able to play another song on the radio. You are not running your life. It's under the power of other forces, okay? And there will be a day that you can't turn on the television anymore, okay? It happens to everybody, unless you get it, unless you get emptiness, unless you do something about it, okay? Sure? Later. Okay, we gotta go. John's gonna hit me. That's really bad karma. Maybe the elephant can. Okay, that's all. So basically he attacks the other guy. The people who come up and say the sheik didn't exist until you put your money down, he says, you're talking about a sheik that was self-existent. By the way, if the sheik was self-existent, he says, it would never change. Okay? Of course it does change. Right? Number four, name another kind of event which the above proof demonstrates cannot exist through any nature of its own. Okay? What have we been trying to prove so far? If you remember that stupid picture, wherever it is, we promised to talk about three things. The cause. Now you see, money doesn't work. Okay, honestly, money doesn't work. So you can stop fighting for it. You can stop ever doing, saying, or thinking anything negative to another living being to get money. Because that doesn't work. That's not how you get money. And that's not why money works, okay? You cannot get money by saying, thinking, or doing anything harmful to another living being. It's a lie. It's an illusion. It's incomplete worldview, and it will never make you happy. And you've confirmed that with your life so far. So give it up. Money doesn't have any power of its own until you endow it with your good karma, with goodness, okay? Then it has all the power you want. You can take a dollar and turn it into $1,000,000, honestly. Okay. The result, the shake, is not self-existently tasty. Alright? The tastiness doesn't come from the shake. You can go to a restaurant and complain all you want. You know, you can go to the best restaurant and get a crappy meal. You know that. Okay. Why? You don't have the karma to have a nice meal. All right. It doesn't depend on your money. It doesn't depend on the name of the restaurant. It doesn't depend on how many stars it has. Okay. Really. Because it's not self-existent. That's not what's making it tasty. Your karma is making it tasty. That's why you can go to a good restaurant and have a crappy meal, and that's why you can go to a lousy restaurant and have a nice meal. Okay. What about the ending of the shake? We got to talk about that. Okay. We've explained how things start, but we didn't explain how things end. And Master Shantideva at this point says, "Oh, you can use that last proof I gave to explain why things end, why things stop. Why does the shake run out? Okay. Why is it that if you do not practice the Buddhist path correctly, you will listen to your last song on the radio, or you will see your last TV show in this life? There will come a day in this life when you are incapable of reaching out and turning on the television. It will happen. Okay? It will happen. If you don't practice this worldview properly, it will happen. It must happen. Okay? Why? What happens when Michael and Zoe's shake runs out? That's the question. Then we can move on. Why? Your karma wore out. Okay? Your good karma wore out. That's all. Karma is created by causes. Anything created by causes wears out. Period. Okay? Good karma wears out. So what about a Buddha field? What about a Buddha paradise? I mean, you're standing up there saying, I can reach some place where I don't have to die. You can reach some place where there's angels around me all the time. Isn't that going to wear out? Isn't that just a result of good karma? Isn't it just another projection forced on me by my helping the old ladies across the street and all that? Yeah. Yeah, it would wear out, except Buddhas know how to, what do you call it, recycle it. What do you call it? Perpetuate it. There's a perpetuating method, okay? It's like, if every time you get money, you give it away, you always have money. You see what I mean? If you keep dedicating, you know, if you keep, Buddhas have a ability to take the result of their good karma and turn it into more good karma than the good karma they started with. And it's just always going like that. It never ends, okay? I think it's like fusion. They say that there's going to be, that's the idea that you put less energy into the reaction than you get out. And if they could ever discover that, I know they're working on it, right? Then a teaspoon of water would run all the cities in the world. Because more energy would come out than is put in. You see what I mean? Karmically, it's already been done. Karmically, Buddhas are already doing it. Yeah, less energy in than out, and always perpetuating itself. Okay. Yeah. I think it contributes, yeah. Yeah. She said their ability to be in all places where someone needs somebody and has the karma to see them as anything, like a dog or a tree or a wave. Yeah. They're automatically collecting good karma all the time. It's perpetuating itself. Yeah.
Is what you said about good karma true also for bad karma, that it wears out?
Absolutely. And that's why you can get out of a hell. And that's why headache stops. It's not because you took aspirin. Why?
That sounds like it'll just wind down by itself. You don't
do it. No, because you're perpetuating the opposite. How? You get angry. You know, when you're hurting, we didn't get enough sleep, you get grumpy. Or something like that. You see what I mean? It's the nature of bad karma that normally it's a downward cycle. When you don't feel well, you yell at people. When you yell at people, you don't feel well more. And because of that, you yell at people. And people say, karma doesn't sound fair. You see what I mean? God's fair. You know, if you're nice, he'll help you. And even if you're not nice, he'll still help you. But karma sounds kind of cruel, you know? It doesn't seem fair. It's like accusing gravity of not being fair. You see what I mean? Seriously. I mean, gravity doesn't care whether you're a pen or a human standing on the 100th floor of the Empire State Building. If you jump, he'll pull you down and flatten you. You know, whether you're a person or a pen, you can't talk about karma in those terms. Karma is not a person. Karma is a principle. You can't avoid it. If you step off the Empire State Building, karma will do its thing. You know, And if you throw a dummy off the Empire State Building, he'll do his thing. He doesn't care whether you're a nice person or a fat person or a skinny person or you have kids or you don't have kids or anything like that. Karma is relentless. If you know how it works, you can use it for good things. If you don't know what's going on, it is going to make you suffer. And there is no justice. If you're good, you get exact crap in, crap out. You know, if you're good, you'll get an excellent result. If you're bad, you'll get a bad result. And never, ever does anything else happen. That's why you can get enlightened, you know. Yeah. By the way, if it ever acted somewhere other way, things would really be terrible. We couldn't get enlightened, you know. You wouldn't know what to do. Yeah, loud.
Sure, I don't know much about it, but I've heard the term fallen angels.
I saw it in the subway.
I don't know what they mean by that. But in the case of the scriptures of enlightenment, the Buddhists, in addition to being able to perpetually recreate the light state of the Buddhists,
yeah.
Is there also the kind of safety clause that there's no way that they will decide to create something negative?
Right. He's asking basically, is Buddhahood an eternal state? You know, once you get there, could you ever degenerate? And there's a huge scriptures on it, huge books written about it. They're called Gelu Nishu, the 20 permutations of the... It's a flow chart for enlightenment. You know, all the stages of realization. Some of them you can degenerate from, and some of them you cannot. And you cannot degenerate from enlightenment. Once you're there, you will always be there. You can't go back. It's called Mindopa. In fact, there's a state you reach before enlightenment where you cannot be turned back. Nothing in the universe can turn you back at that point. Okay. All right. So what we did basically was we proved that the cause of the milkshake depends on its existence, on your karma and your thoughts and your projections. And that even more difficult to understand, the starting of the milkshake also depends on your projections. Okay? It's one thing to understand the emptiness of a standing object, something that's not moving. But to understand the emptiness of the sun coming up, that's a little harder. Motion seems to be more self-existent than things that are standing still. And the last two classes, what we've been trying to say is that even the motion of things is caused by your karma, okay? Is a projection. If you sit and stare at a chair, that's a projection, or at a pen. But if I drop the pen and go down, then my movement is also your projection. Got it? That's a little harder. The fact that the milkshake can stand there and be for a while is a projection. And very importantly, the ending of the milkshake, the reason any of the good things in your life ends, is also only a projection. It's a shift in your mind. Nothing's changing outside. It's a shift in your mind. If that were not the case, things could never change. Get used to it. Things change because they're empty. Things change because they are your projections. Get used to it. Nothing's changing outside of you. Okay? They don't change. Your mind changes. Your mind shifts. As long as you keep up the karma that makes things shift, you will be forced to lose everything nice in your life. Period. Okay? Your health, your appearance, your family, your friends, your career, your own mind's ability to think. Everything about you, you must lose. You will lose. Why? It's a projection. It will run out. Okay? That's why you suffer. That's the emptiness of samsara. Got it? That's the emptiness of suffering. That's the emptiness of your life. Okay? Your karmas are wearing out. As we speak, there was a karma that threw you into this realm. There was this big, huge karma that threw you into this realm. The minute you get here, it starts wearing out. Everybody gets old. You know, everybody as we sit here is falling apart. Okay? Your mind is actually slowing down as we sit here. Okay? I mean, it's a projection of my karma, and that's wearing out as we speak. Unless you can learn how to create the best kinds of good karma, it will wear out. It must wear out. And that is the emptiness of suffering. That's the emptiness of our lives. Okay. Question. Is the opposite also empty? If it's true, okay, what you're standing up there saying, what you've been saying all these classes, if it's true, if your worldview, you know, one guy against 3 billion, okay, or whatever, you know, if your worldview happens to be right, and the worldview shared by 3 billion people is wrong, okay, let's say, just for argument's sake, it's called Tapatasungi Rigpa in Tibetan, and let's just say that your worldview is correct, okay, does the opposite process also involve emptiness? Okay. In other words, if I understand that, for example, that my body is just a bunch of colors and shapes, and that if I have different kind of karma, I could be looking at the radiant arm of an angel. Okay. Is that also supported by the fact of emptiness? Is emptiness responsible for that? Absolutely. You see what I mean? The process by which the world gets screwed up and the process by which you and I are getting old and dying depends on the emptiness of this world. Okay? Why? Because everything is a projection. Everything is our karmas. Our karmas are wearing out, so we get pain. Okay? All the nice things are projections. They must wear out. You must lose them. Okay? Can you turn it around? Of course, that's why we're having a Buddhism class. And you can, okay? How much time do you have to do it? You don't know. You don't know when the karma is going to wear out. How much karma does it take to turn it around? A hell of a lot of karma. What's the first step? You have to understand the process. If you don't really believe it, if you sit here and listen and then you don't do anything in 2 or 3 days, you're just going to die like everybody else, okay? You have to turn it around. How to turn it around? Collect good karma. What's good karma? You know what's good karma if you can see the future. I can't see the future. I don't know which actions are good that create good karma in the future. I don't know which actions are bad and create bad things in the future. Could you tell me? We refer to an enlightened being. Who? The Buddha. How do you collect good karma? 3 sets of vows, okay? 3 sets of behavior. 3 guidelines for behavior. First one is called pratimoksha. It's morality. Plain old morality. From the 10 good deeds on up to the 253 vows of a fully ordained monk. So you can, you know, choose your poison between there. You know, if you want 10, 10's okay. 36, 36, you know, whatever. Okay. Whichever level you choose to follow, you have to have some kind of code of behavior, ethical code. Then there's the bodhisattva behavior, which you have been studying for this whole year. Okay. At the end, you should take the 64 bodhisattva vows and then start practicing them. Okay. If you want to accelerate things and get everything done in this life for sure, take tantric vows and keep them. Okay. Are they some kind of weird sexual thing? I saw it at Open Center last night. You know, I had a student, her husband asked me, you know, is that... Not at all, okay? Not at all. They're very sweet, normal, beautiful, clean behavior. They are strongly based on the 10 non, you know, avoiding the plain old 10 non-virtues, okay? They're totally based on that. They're totally based on living a very pure, clean, holy life. And in fact, much more strictly than someone who doesn't take them, okay? So nothing like that, all right? Keep those vows. Is it enough to take them and just have them for a while? No, you have to keep them. What's the best way to keep them? I'll tell you, I'll break a tantric vow, okay? Well, I won't exactly break it, okay. Yeah. Anyway, it involves, okay, closely monitoring your behavior, okay? The Kadampa Geshes used to keep a bag of black and white rocks, and every time they thought something dirty or said something bad, they would take a black rock out and put it in their left pocket. And every time they had a good thought, they would put it in their white rock, a pebble, in their right pocket. And at the end of the day, they would empty out their pockets and count, you know. And there's this big pile of black pebbles and this little pile of white pebbles, you know. And basically, that is the method. And I'll teach you, and I can teach you, I'm allowed to teach you. We're going to do it on this Monday night, this coming Monday night, if you don't know how to do that practice of monitoring your vows, which is the only way to get to enlightenment, come on Monday night, okay, at 6th Street, 7 o'clock, okay? We'll be back from Connecticut, right? Okay. All right. Right? Okay. Okay. That's good. Oh, so in a way, if you think about it, the fact that our suffering has emptiness is what causes it. You see what I mean? It's a projection of bad karma. And the fact that nirvana has emptiness is how we can achieve it, because that's going to be projections of excellent karma. Okay. By the way, what's the definition of nirvana? Basically, removing all your bad emotions forever. Jealousy, anger, desire, pride, etc. Okay. What's really happening when you get there? Are there self-existent bad emotions being removed from your mind forever? No. What's really happening? Interesting. It's cool. The day you reach nirvana, you are being forced by your past good deeds to imagine that you don't have any bad emotions in your mind. It's also a projection. Get it? It's also a result of good karma. There will come a day when your karma is so powerful, it will force you not to see those emotions in your own mind. And that's called nirvana. The fact that that quality which nirvana has, and that quality which samsara has or suffering has, is called natural nirvana. Okay? And I'm going to write it for you. Okay, say Rangshingi, Nyangde, Rangshingi, Nyangde. Nyangde, as I said, Nyangde means nirvana, okay? Nyangde, the end means nirvana, Nyangde. Nirvana is defined as roughly as the end of your bad emotions, okay? Negative emotions, roughly, okay? But Rangshingi Nyangde means the fact that everything is empty. Okay? There is nothing which has any nature of its own. All the nature that things have, good or bad or neutral, is coming from you. Okay? On their own, they don't have any nature at all. They don't have any nature of even existing on their own. That's also coming from you. Okay? Everything has that quality, and as we near the end of the 9th chapter, which we are, Master Shantideva wants to tie emptiness into your life. You know, it's no good to study emptiness a philosophy class and then go home and not use it for something. Okay? He wants to tie it to your life. So he says, he teaches the principle of say, Sishi Nyamni. It's kind of a tongue twister, okay? Sishi Nyamni. Okay. Si means your suffering life, the life you're in right now. Unless you're a tantric deity, I didn't recognize yet. Okay. Si means samsara. Okay. For example, the wheel of life is called si koilo, si pe koilo. Okay. Shi means peace, which in Buddhism is a code word for nirvana and Buddhahood. Okay. Peace means nirvana and Buddhahood, the opposite of si. Okay. Nyamni means they're the same. They are equivalent. Nyampani means doesn't even mean similar. It means they are equivalent. You know, and you hear these people say, no problem, you know. It's all the same. You know, Buddhism says, I heard, Nagarjuna said, Arya Nagarjuna said, samsara, meaning your suffering life, and nirvana are all the same. We just didn't see it yet. It's some mystical state where you get into where pain is as cool as pleasure. Something like that. Okay? In fact, I heard that Shantideva said, where is that? Okay, say, Nyangyan, Deda, Made, Paang, Teni, Tuni. Kepa. Met. I think it's knee, okay? No.
I'll check, okay? It's somewhere in a computer. Well, I'll worry about it later. Hang on a second. Let me get it right. I'll give it to you next class, but I think it's ni. Okay. Yangyan de means nirvana. Dung means and. Madepa means not getting to nirvana. Getting to nirvana and not getting to nirvana. I'm going to the next, to the last half of the second line. Kepa me means it's all the same. No difference. No difference between getting to nirvana and not getting to nirvana. Okay? That's like saying no difference between a two boots pizza and getting your wisdom teeth taken out. Okay? Seriously. All right? And that's like saying that. And people have, I've heard many people say that. Oh, Arya Nagarjuna said it's all the same, you know. Master Shantideva said in this two lines, it's all the same. Suffer here, get enlightened, it's all the same. No difference, okay? But there's this other little part here, right? Dini Duni, or Dini Duna, okay? Dini Duni means in terms of their real nature, okay? In terms of their real nature. What nature? Their natural nirvana. That's why we call it natural nirvana. What's their natural nirvana? Their emptiness. Okay. From that point of view, your pain and your enlightenment are the same. Why? They're both empty. Whether you go through one or whether you go through the other, it's going to be because you projecting onto it. It's your projection of your mind. Oh, in that case, I'll take the pleasure. Sorry. Sorry, you have to do the good karma first, okay? Can I do it today and sit back tomorrow? Probably not, okay? You have to do it for a while. You have to do it seriously, okay? According to Buddhism, it cannot fail. It's not like self-existent money. It's not like self-existent milkshakes. It's not like capitalism or socialism or communism or Western worldview or science or anything else. It works all the time. All the time. And it explains everything. It's functional and it's comprehensive. And my claim, and the claim of Buddhism, is that the worldview that we hold now is not comprehensive. Why? It doesn't explain why some people die and others don't die at any particular time. And it's dysfunctional. Why? Human beings in the world today are not one iota more happy than human beings who lived 1,000 years ago. Okay. It doesn't work. It did not make us happier. It did not achieve your goals. And it didn't make you not die or get old. Okay? It keeps you together a few years longer, maybe. Okay. Oh, well, maybe Indians were happy in the old days, you know, nature and all that. Forget it, you know. Some of the cruelest wars fought on American soil were the Indian tribes slaughtering each other. You know what I mean? Don't fall for that either. People are just as miserable as now as they were 1,000 years ago, and they were just as miserable as we are. Why? They didn't have a right worldview. It didn't work. It really didn't work. They didn't see that the best way to get more meat is to make sure that other people get the bison, you know. That's hard to figure out. They didn't see that the way to make money was to be generous. You see? They didn't see that the way to get delicious meals was to cook other people's meals. You see what I mean? They didn't see that the way to happiness is to be compassionate and caring for other people. Mm-hmm. Period. And until you do, you'll suffer. Okay. But from the point of view of emptiness, suffering and pleasure and pain are totally equivalent. Si, shin, yam, ni. Nirvana and not going to nirvana are totally equivalent. Why? They both have this great potential called what? Natural nirvana. Code name for emptiness. Okay. Got it? So you see, natural nirvana and nirvana are very related. That's a homework question. Okay? I call it regular nirvana. Somebody saw the homework, they said, come on, don't call it regular nirvana.
By the way, I really want to thank the people who help with the readings and the homework. It takes like 10 hours of intense work. People are working all night sometimes to finish the readings and stuff like that. And they're all getting cranky and overstressed and hopefully not creating any bad karma. But there's people really working hard to finish them. And I would like to thank them, and I'm not going to name them, okay? But that's what Nagarjuna meant when he said suffering and pleasure are the same. Nirvana and samsara are the same. All he meant was they're both empty, they both have natural nirvana, and if you know how to use natural nirvana, you can get to regular nirvana, okay, and Buddhahood. Alright? That's all. I think we're just about done. Don't tell Stella. Let's see. I can make up something more. We got that. There's one short one. 2 minutes. Okay, say sepe.
Sepe.
Corsum.
Corsum.
Sepe.
Sepe.
Corsum.
Corsum.
The last thing that Master Shantideva wants to talk about in regard to all these emptinesses is how do you get it to work for you? How do you get it to work for you? Sepa means an act of craving. You can say jealousy, for example. Okay, wanting what other people have and being unhappy that they have it and you don't have it. Okay, sepa. Sepa generally means craving. I'm going to use the example of jealousy because that's the enemy which I am struggling with just about every day. Okay, sepa. Kor means the three elements. Korsum means the three elements. There are three things going on in an act of jealousy. If you understand the emptiness of each of them, you can get out of it. You can defeat it forever. Okay. And according to Buddhism, only by understanding these three emptinesses. Okay. What are they? First one, the emptiness of the sepeshi, the thing you're jealous about. Okay. The thing you're jealous about. What? Oh, somebody else getting attention, for example. Okay. The object of your jealousy. Okay. Sepeshi. You can replace it with any mental affliction. There's 83,999 others, according to scripture. Okay? Roughly. Okay? Sepeshi. What's the example? You have a friend who has another friend, and the other friend is getting attention from your friend when you would like them to have pay attention to you. Okay? What is the object of the jealousy? Is your friend's friend. Okay? The other friend. The other person who's getting the attention that you're not getting, okay? That would be the object of the jealousy. What is the emptiness of that object? By the way, I'll give you a clue, okay? You know real emperors, Chakrabartins, right? They rule the world. According to Buddhism, there's planetary presidents. And the whole world begs them to be president. And then if you don't have quite that much karma, you have to sort of threaten everybody, and then they'll make you president. You have to campaign. And then they'll make you president. And if you don't have that much karma, you can like collect a big army and threaten everybody, and they'll say, okay, you can be president of the world, you know. But this is there have been beings like that on this planet, in other planets, okay? And it's very interesting, you see, the ones who have to threaten people have the karma to have competition. You see what I mean? There's a karma that makes you have competition. What is the karma? If it's like in a relationship, the karma is sexual misconduct, adultery. You did adultery in your past, or you checked out some other person's spouse or something like that, even just lightly, and now you're going to have competition for years with the person that you like. That's the emptiness of the object of your jealousy, okay? That person exists because you committed some kind of sexual misconduct, even just mentally, okay? That's why that person exists, okay? That's where they came from. Don't blame them, and don't blame your friend who's giving them the attention. You created them, literally. Okay, they exist only because of you. Prove it. There's people who don't have competition. Well, how come some people have competition, some people don't? Well, your worldview doesn't explain that yet. Okay. Is it just random? Is it a God who is like unfair to some people and fair to others? You know, you figure it out. Okay, number two, sepapo. The emptiness of the person having the jealousy. Okay? Sepapo. By the way, in the case of someone who irritates you,
what's the best way to get rid of them? I mean, by the way, you don't even have to live in a world where you have competition. You can eliminate all competition. How? Buddhism doesn't say you have to put up with the crap. You can eliminate the crap. You can get rid of the other guy. How? Be perfectly moral sexually. Keep your vows sweetly. You'll never have any competition. Okay? You can actually get rid of the other people. How do you get rid of irritating people? Stop reacting with anger. And they will slowly disappear. There are people who seem to slide through life without ever meeting bad people very often. And that's because they have been patient year after year. And now they're getting the sweet result of that. And everyone they meet is sweet. You see, it's possible. It works. Eventually, if you keep that up, you get to a paradise. Seriously. You will.
Okay. Sepapo means
the person who's being jealous. Okay. Yeah, me. Are you reading my book? Sorry. Okay. Yeah, the person being jealous. What's the best way to be ugly, have bad breath, have perspiration, have a, you know, be physically unattractive in the future? It's jealousy. Okay? Seriously. That's one of the karmic results of jealousy. If you want to make sure that you never get the object of your attention, be as jealous as you can. Okay? It's interesting. You're screwing up your own future by having a mental affliction. Okay? You're messing up your own future happiness. You know, Buddhism says people actually are very actively engaged in the art of screwing up their own futures. You know? Yeah.
Is there a list of this in scripture?
Yeah, there is, and I'll give it to you if you like. Jetsun Kapa called it from scripture the Vinaya scriptures, the Kirub, the Jataka tales of the Buddha. They are not kids' stories. They were meant to outline all the actions and their consequences for beings who cannot see into the future, which means us. Okay. For example, I lived on 39th Street in Hell's Kitchen. We had this, if you guys remember who were there, we had this huge garbage thing outside, and on a hot day, there was a vegetable stand and a fruit stand, and it was full of rotting vegetables. And it was this incredible sweet smell, you know? That smell is a result of sexual misconduct, okay? For example, okay? I mean, and then you would never guess that. The reason there are potholes in New York is the result of unkindly speech towards other people, for anyone who falls into a pothole. Seriously, no kidding. And those are difficult. You wouldn't guess those things. You can, by the way, address the karma that's creating any particular problem you have. A health problem, mental problem, depression, low self-esteem, a spouse that you're having a problem with, a boss you're having a problem with. You can analyze backwards. You can work backwards from the problem. And you can identify the karma that you must have committed, even though it might have been long ago. And you can stop that karma. And that's a very cool process. That's purification. It's a four-step process. You can identify the real cause of the problems in your life, and you can go about removing the karmic seed which is actually causing them to exist. You know, it's very cool. Okay. Sepechawa. The action of jealousy itself. The action of jealousy itself. The event of me getting jealous. Okay. Why did it happen? It's one of the karmic results of being jealous in the past. Okay. One of the screwy things about jealousy or any other emotion is that, negative emotion is that, it creates karma for that to continue in your mind in the future. Okay. The event of my having the jealousy is being caused by my past jealousy. And now I'm going to have to undergo more mental suffering in the future. I will have the same habit in the future, long into the future. Okay. It'll make me miserable much longer than the present moment. Okay? That's called the three elements. The three, korsum means the three elements. If you understand in an act of jealousy what's really going on, the last thing you would want to do is continue. Okay? It's the best way to screw up what you're trying to get. In fact, according to Buddhism, it's the only way to lose what you're trying to get. It's very ironic. Okay, it's very ironic. I'll repeat. The natural reaction you have to something bad happening is the best way to get it to happen again. Okay, according to Buddhism, all your suffering is coming from your stupid reactions to things that you don't like. Okay, and you have to learn to do the opposite. Okay. Yeah.
About the emptiness of karma itself.
It is empty itself, and we can talk about it. And what that means is that some people will never understand it. Some people will never perceive it as an object, as an existing thing. The laws of karma are not written up in Time magazine every week. You know, all those people who don't get to read about the laws of karma don't have the karma to be projecting the laws of karma.
Okay. So, Dhamma song, instant karma, cannot take
place. Right, can't take place. But you can get really fast karma. You can get really fast karma, and I'm going to talk about that right now, and then we'll stop by 10, and still, you all have to be out in 2 minutes. Okay. We've been talking about a lot of different proofs about emptiness. A lot of them, I know, seem to you to be very obscure or difficult. You know, I stood up here and said, this is this, and you were like, you know. And then I kept saying stuff like that, and maybe you got more and more, and maybe you didn't get more and more, but you were wondering, does he really get it? You know. I mean, Master Shantideva, if you look at the picture, he really did start to fly. I mean, as he taught this chapter, I assume he was already into this part, because this is near the end. He actually, there were very few of monks in that ancient monastic monastery who could understand what he was talking about. You know, very few people there understood the last part of this chapter. He taught it in one sitting, right? The whole book. And he just, they say he started to fly up in the air. Whether you take it as a metaphor or not, definitely the entire audience was pretty confused or lost by that time, okay? It is possible to hear all of these things. It is possible to pick up the ninth chapter and immediately understand it as if you were reading a newspaper, okay? Not only that, it's possible to take that chapter and go sit down in meditation and see emptiness directly, okay? You can do it. Okay, there are people on this planet who can look at the ninth chapter and immediately understand all of it, and there are people on this planet who have seen emptiness directly. So what's the difference between a person who hasn't done it yet and a person who has done it yet? Is there any trick? You know what I mean? And that's the last thing I wanted to talk about tonight. Jetsun Kapa, who was a teacher of the first Dalai Lama, he spent half his time, you know, he was a great scholar. He wrote 10,000 pages of commentaries that are, a lot of them are a lot harder than this, okay? He wrote 10,000 pages in his life. He founded the great monasteries of Tibet, the three great monasteries, which at their peak had like 25,000 monks in them. He met the Buddha directly in the form of Manjushri. He learned this subject directly from an enlightened being, okay? How did he do it, you know? And wouldn't it be, I mean, what I'm trying to say is if you're going to really study emptiness, you better know the trick to get it fast and to get it so that you just look at it and you know immediately what they're talking about, or that you see emptiness directly. He spent about half of his lifetime in retreat, in meditation, and most of that time was spent requesting his Lama for his blessing, okay, that he could bless his mind. Okay, so if you seriously, in the monastery when you get to the study of emptiness, it's your 13th year, you start studying this subject. You actually get time off, they give you time off, and you go do some retreat. And Ken Rinpoche, for example, did a very powerful retreat when he reached his 13th year of his studies, which would have been around 1940, okay? You actually go into meditation, and you go into a retreat, and you sit, and you visualize your heart teacher, your root lama, and you beg them for their blessing, you know what I mean? And you have to learn that skill. I mean, we should have had a class on that, maybe. But if you do it, then you can pick up this book and read it like a newspaper, and everything will be obvious to you, and then you will see emptiness directly, okay? And you don't have to die like this, but you have to spend. What I'm encouraging you to do is spend some amount of your time as you try to understand these objects, maybe just before your final. you know, meditate on your root lama and ask your root lama for their blessing, you know. And it works, okay? I mean, the only way I ever studied these things was, literally, when I do a reading, I spend about an equal amount of time doing that. Seriously, honestly. I'm not trying to praise myself. I'm trying to say it works. And you can give them equal airtime. You know, you should disappear a couple of days before a reading and ask them for a blessing. You know, try to be in their presence and try to get their blessing. Okay. What's the emptiness of their blessing? Is their blessing self-existent? Can they bless you? What are they, like cheapskates? They only bless people who beg them to bless them? That's the Christian thing, right? Please bless me, you know. Yeah, I'm not going to bless you until you really get down on your knees, you know. I'm a jealous, you know, anyway. Why? Why? You know, are they like holding out until you grovel, you know? Obviously not. They love you more than you love yourself. You know, they would love to bless you, but something's missing. And it's interesting. They don't have any power to bless you at all. Okay? If they could bless you, they would have done it yesterday. They would have done it before you started the ninth chapter. They have no reason to hold out. There's no, absolutely no incentive for an enlightened being not to bless you if they could bless you, but the fact is they can't bless you. Okay? So why did Jetsun Kapa spend roughly half his life asking his lamas for their blessing, you know, and trying to stay in their presence, trying to be near them to have their blessing, you know? It's a result of your faith. You see what I mean? You can get a blessing. You can wheedle, you can force a blessing out of those lamas. How? With great devotion, ask them to bless you. You know what I mean? With faith and with knowledge, ask them to bless you. Okay? And it's the faith, it's funny, you know, as with everything else, it's your motivation and it's your devotion which creates the blessing, you see? And you'll get it. And I swear, you pick up a book on emptiness or something, it looks like a newspaper. You can just read it, you know, you understand it perfectly, okay? So I'll answer afterwards, okay? You can come back. I'm giving you a, what do you call it? Like, a clue, right? Yeah, inside dope. Okay, yeah, inside dope. Do it, okay? And then everything will change. Your whole understanding of Manimiku will change. Try to spend, especially with emptiness, it's funny, you can sit there and stare at the same Tibetan words hour after hour, and you won't get it. Go into your prayer room, visualize your holy lama, sweet holy lama, and ask them for their blessing, okay? And then they do it, okay? It works, okay? All right, that's all, yeah, okay.
Sāshī bhūti jūshī metā jāṁ rīrā vinshī nyamdē nyampādī sāṅgē shindhū mitte uvāgī jokū nāmbā shimbā jūpā
This is the end of Class 9. You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.